time went up from 6.4 to 6.5.
Starting a new topic tonight, one of the most famous articles of Rav Kook, internationally, also for Jews, non-Jews, and it's been translated into different languages, is Chazon HaTzimchonut. Rav Kook was one of the first philosophers, for sure the first rabbi, to this day, probably the only rabbi of his stature to write such a lengthy masa on the topic of vegetarianism. It originally appeared in a booklet called Chazon HaTzimchonut VeHaShalom. It was part of a sidra, a series called Afikim BaNegev. Those who want to see it at length, it's found in Otsrot HaRaya, Rav Moshe Tzuriel. We really could spend an entire year on this.
This is excellent, by the way. It's Rav Kook. It's Rav Kook with his explanation.
Okay. And obviously, in our limited time that we have, I thought of choosing just a couple of piskaot from Chazon HaTzimchonut. And obviously, anybody who's interested in the topic should read up on more. And
was Rav Kook vegetarian?
No, Rav Kook was not a vegetarian. That's a good point to make from the outset. His son, Rav Tzvi Yehuda, who didn't eat too much at all, as all his shamashim testify, he used to live on matzah and honey, a little matzah, a little honey, a little dates every now and then, aside from Seudot Mitzvah. And Dakai heard this from many people, that when he, just like, as you know, the minhag is if somebody invites you to Brit Milah, you're not supposed to refuse. So too, regarding the Seudot Mitzvah, Rav Tzvi Yehuda was very, very careful. Shabbat, obviously, is a Seudot Mitzvah. They say at the Vatikim and Yeshiva in Lon Moreh, when they went up to start the Yeshiva in Sebastia, Rav Tzvi Yehuda came to plant the first tree, and they had a Seudot Mitzvah, a Chanukat Yeshuv. And one of the women there, who had cooked the food, she served, and then she came in and she asked, does anybody want any more? And Rav Tzvi Yehuda said, yes, please. So she brought him some more. And then after another 10 minutes, she comes and says, would anybody like any more? And he said, yes, please. And after 6 or 7 times, somebody told her that if she would ask 100 times, he would seize that as something, that an offer you can't refuse. And that's when he ate. At one point, was a vegetarian. And his father, Rav Kook, wrote to him that he doesn't like the idea so much. And you'll see over the few paragraphs that we're going to learn why. What is Rav Kook's reaction to vegetarianism is.
And Nazir was really vegetarian.
Right. His one of his top talmidim, the famous Nazir of David Cohen, was a vegetarian. Okay, Basar Ta'ava. This is a Piskat Dalit, the fourth paragraph. Bivo Heter HaTorah L'Achilat Basar. When the Torah came to allow the eating of meat, what is that word allowing for?
Right.
Well,
no.
Originally it wasn't allowed, right? It's not L'Achilat.
No.
Right? Only then, Acharei Kedushat HaMitzvot B'Matan Torah. Right, the laws of Shechita are brought down in Dvarim Perek Yud Bet. After Parshat Ve'etchanan and the Ten Commandments is given, right afterwards we find the laws of Shechita. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't give the Shechita, the laws of Shechita, until we were on that level of the Ten Commandments. Hericha Ba'atza'ad Dvarim. The Torah goes at length to present the idea of the laws of Shechita. By the way, the laws of Shechita are not written in the Torah. What does it say? It says you shall slaughter the way I taught you, the way I command you. In other words, in the oral law.
For Torah Shabbat Pem in the Torah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
There was an oral law where God showed what had to be done. And that Dafka stresses that much more the fact that the introduction is very lengthy. The laws of Shechita are not mentioned. The introduction is very lengthy. Ve'amarta ochla basar. Right? When you should say, and I want to eat meat. Ki tave nafshecha le'echol basar. Because you desire to eat meat. Bechol avat nafshecha tochal basar. You shall eat it with your desire. In other words, the idea of desire is mentioned twice. The word ta'ava is usually translated either as desire or usually in a more negative way. What would be a negative term?
Lust.
Animal instinct.
Lust, right. Whereas if you lust to eat meat, and you lust to eat meat, it says twice, then you should slaughter this in this way. In other words, if you don't lust it, it's better not. Now, this is
maybe if you both dress in black and even just go to a strange city, too.
We have a previous lechatchila as well, right? Adam and Chava, we know we're vegetarians. As Rav Kook goes on to say, and the Ramchal writes a lot about this in Derech Hashem, that the goal of man is to strive to return to the level of the Garden of Eden. And part of that level was that we were vegetarian. When did God allow man to eat? After the Mabul, after the flood. And we'll talk about why Davka, when man sunk morally and religiously, why God felt there a need to allow, bid'evid, begrudgingly, for man to eat meat. Okay? And then we have here another warning. Yesh kan ge'arat chacham misteret ve'he'arat gvulit. Rav Kook says, we have here a wise man's rebuke. And there's, what is a wise man's rebuke? As Chazal very often say, day l'chakima b'remiza. For a wise person, you understood the hint. And, ve'he'arat gvulit. Herak Vulit, Rav Kook may be referring here to a footnote. Or it could be Herak Vulit, a marginal, in-between the lines message. In other words, it's very clear that on the one hand, God does not prohibit eating meat. Yes, we are allowed to eat meat, explicitly. And he even tells us how to do it. On the other hand, it's very clear that it's not part of the ideal. Klomar kol zman shemusariyutcha pnimit lo takotz b'achilat basar balei chayim. As long as your internal morality is not disgusted with the idea of eating meat, kmo shekvarat hakatz mibsar adam, like you're already disgusted with the idea of cannibalism, of eating human flesh. Rav Kook says, eventually we will be disgusted with the idea of eating animal meat. Maybe before I go on, I'll parenthetically add a point. One of the yesodot, one of the basic ideas that appears very often in the writings of Rav Kook, and I have no doubt that we've mentioned it over the year, is an idea. Rav Tzvi Yehuda worded it very nicely in Tivot Yisrael. Habdiyavad shel ha'adam hu alechatchila shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, when man is put in a situation that he has to rely on a bidiyavad, how would you translate bidiyavad? A secondary option, in other words, not the best, but the Torah does allow it. Rav Kook says, a fallback position. Who put you in that situation? God. In other words, there are two ways of dealing with bidiyaved, with a situation which is not ideal. One is to mope around and to be depressed and to say, oh, this is a shame, this is chaval, I wish it would be otherwise. Rav Kook says, who made it this way? Right? If there's a God who runs the world, He is the one wanting you in this situation. Right? I never asked to be born in America. If you would ask me, I would prefer not to be born in America. But once I was born there, there must be a reason, right? If I know English and I can give classes on the internet to people who speak English, right? Or some people are born to non-religious families. Because obviously that's second best. On the other hand, who put you there? There's God obviously put you in a certain situation where even if that means that sometimes halachically you have to rely on a second best position, right? A classic example. Very often people, when they go visit their parents, right? If their parents aren't as careful in the observance of the laws of kashrut, right? And you know, you speak to a rabbi and he tells you, listen, on this, there's flexibility. On other issues, there's no flexibility, right? Sometimes in your house you do it this way, this and this way, that's lechatchila.
Or when you're in Miluim.
Right, or when you're in Miluim, in the army, for example, right? You have to go to Miluim, it's a melchemet mitzvah, right? We have enemies and we have to fight, etc. And the question is, so what to do with in that situation? Right? And there's ensfor, that's endless, the examples that come up in life where you'll find, once you learn this idea, that it's important to apply to learn this. There is
not every video of a situation is because of Kodesh Baruch Hu, isn't it? As in, we can put ourselves in video of a situation as well.
You got to be honest. I'll give a good example. Setting up a Sanhedrin. I think we once gave this example. It's very clear that setting up a Beit Din and a Sanhedrin system is one of the 613 commandments. And Rav Kook tried to set up a Sanhedrin. And he did everything that he could to try and set up. As a matter of fact, the chief rabbinate, which was set up, was, he wrote explicitly, as a first step towards rejuvenating the Sanhedrin. But in one of his letters, he writes that it's a good thing that we don't have a Sanhedrin, because we don't want people to observe Shabbat just because of the threat of a punishment of the Sanhedrin, right? And apparently that is God's desire, that it's in our better interest and in God's, in the Torah's, in the idea, the world's better interest, that we not have a Sanhedrin today. Same thing with the Beit HaMikdash. Rav Kook says the same thing, right? Obviously, there's a mitzvah to build the Beit HaMikdash, and you do everything that you can to build the Beit HaMikdash. But that being said, b'diavad, if we don't have a Beit HaMikdash, realize that today we're better off not having a Beit HaMikdash. People aren't ready for sacrifices. One of the topics that we're going to deal with is the idea of sacrifices in the third Beit HaMikdash. We're going to talk about vegetarianism, etc. Okay. In other words, this idea is a very, very important idea, and obviously it's a little sticky. Right? What is lechatil? You have to learn a lot of halacha, or you have to mikiyayetz. You have to confer with a rabbi to know what is lechatilah and what is b'diavad. Right? Just one last example. A lot of people asked me about co-ed youth movement. Right? B'nai Akiva, co-ed youth movement. So, in the ideal world, obviously, what does the Shulchan Aruch say? Tzarich litrachik me'od me'od, right? And the co-ed youth movement is not to distance yourself, and not to distance yourself a lot, and not to distance yourself a lot. That being said, when I was in a seminar in B'nai Akiva of Europe, and they explained to me the situation, you know, what is the goal of B'nai Akiva in Italy, for example, because they don't know next to anything. And they told me that part of the goal is that Jewish boys should meet Jewish girls and meet each other. And or as they say in Hebrew, tnua mi'urevet nose monea nisue ta'aruvet. Right? Having a mixed youth movement prevents mixed marriages. So is that lechatchila or is that b'di'evet? Right. So what Rav Kook would say is that question is irrelevant. Because if that's the situation, that is the situation. You know, theoretically you can discuss, is it lechatchila, is it b'di'evet, is it good, is it bad, but if that's the situation and the halacha and the rabbanim and this situation say this is what has to be done, don't get down, don't mope about it, right? That is the situation that God wants you to be in.
So the fact that we're not in the shetiv?
after everything you said, yeah. Gamzu l'tova. Gamzu l'tova is only after you did everything that you tried to do.
If you were
just like it's you can't say it's good that we don't have a Beit HaMikdash today, or it's good that we don't have a Sanhedrin today.
So you're not really trying to build it if you say that it's good that you don't have it.
Exactly. And the same thing with Gush Katif, right?
Well,
by the way, even Galut, I would go so far as even Galut. There was a time to be in exile. And when we were in exile, there was a reason why we're in exile. I wouldn't say it was good to be in exile, because right? Exile is a punishment, and it's not, you can't say it's good. Nevertheless, if God put us there, there was a reason why we were there. The whole time, we had to try and make Aliyah. It didn't work. There was no water, there was no economy, there was most people who came here were dying of malaria. There was nothing, you just couldn't. In the end of the 19th century, all of a sudden, those who tried making Aliyah succeeded. And afterwards, it was that much easier, and that much easier, and that much easier. So that was a sign. I mean, we always tried, but it never worked. And all of a sudden, when it works, so that's a sign that you can't rely on exile anymore, right? The time is up. The same thing, as soon as we can build a Beit HaMikdash, obviously, we have to try every day to do it.
So like the balance, on the one hand, is a big, you said that we shouldn't think this to be evident, or we should think this to be evident?
The question is irrelevant. In other words, always remember, and that's one of the main points of vegetarianism, according to Rav Kook, always remember where the goal is. You always have to keep your eye contact with the goal.
And God puts them in certain situations, and based on that, you have to decide how to get there.
Right, exactly. In other words, the goal eventually is vegetarianism. That there's no doubt, that it's very clear. When to do it and how to implement it, okay, that's a question that we're going to discuss. But first of all, and that's the first point here, it's very clear from the goal, from the Torah, that that eventually is the direction. That's the, and we always have to have eye contact with that goal. Rav Kook says that as long as we're not disgusted, revolted with the idea of eating meat, we're allowed to. But he adds parenthetically, as long as we're not revolted with the idea of eating animal flesh like we are revolted by eating human flesh. And then it says parenthetically, Sha'alken lo mutzrecha Torah lichtov alav yisur mefurash. The Torah did not have to write an explicit prohibition on cannibalism. It's not one of the 613 commandments not to eat people. Why? She'ein adam tzarich azara ama she'kanalu kvar musag tili bazeh.
When they first started bringing over workers from Thailand, people were revolted by the fact that they ate dogs and cats.
Yeah.
Like you eat cows and you eat chickens.
Even
pigs. But dogs and cats, it's just they're my friends, you know. Yeah. They, like I don't eat my friends.
Now they bring the Thais in to eat the cats because it's too
late. In the time of Adam Rishon, it was like the animals were all your friends, and like how you wouldn't think of eating them.
That's what one of
how that, does that gel with Ein, you know, Ein Simcha and the Basar V'Yayin? The thing here, it's a very negative. It's only because we're not disgusted by meat yet, so therefore
that's where we're at. In other words,
why make Ein Simcha Ela B'Vayim? It's saying we have to. It's not just we allow it. It's we elevating it to the high end.
That's just for where we're at. Even today, if there's somebody who is revolted by eating meat, he's not allowed to eat meat, even on Yom Tov or Shabbat. There's an isur of Val Tishaktzu. You're not allowed to eat things that disgust you. So the same thing. If you don't enjoy meat, there's no mitzvah at all to eat it. We'll talk a little bit about that.
Wife and daughter who don't eat meat.
Same here, that there's no prohibition in the Torah against cannibalism because it's a natural thing to not want to eat human flesh. Is a little bit problematic to me for a couple of reasons. First of all, just apparently, as far as I understand, it actually is a machloket poskim, whether it's deraita or derabanan, we assert the human flesh.
I remember now. Maybe because of Baal Tishak Tzu. But that's not against eating flesh. That's like if you don't like eating eggplant or tomatoes, it's also someone saying it's not right there for you.
And furthermore,
the bottom line is it's drama.
Furthermore, it seems to me, I'm not sure that there it's any more automatic or natural to be revolted by the idea of eating human flesh than it is to be revolted by the idea of having relations with an animal. Both seem so fundamentally to go against human nature as to be automatic and understood by everyone. And yet, not only do people do both, but one of them is very explicitly prohibited in the Torah.
Okay, so if you noticed, Rav Kook, if we go over the last sentence, he says, "She'in adam tzarich azhara al ma shekana lo kvar musag tiv'i." Is that? In other words, this is something that we've discussed very often, that the world is constantly undergoing evolution, constantly improving, trial and error, and that's the general direction of the world. We spoke about this at length in Orot HaTshuva. And it appears from here that at one point, man really was cannibalistic, but by the time that the Torah was given, we had already matured. We'd already passed that stage.
Probably suggest that.
Was we beating the Jews?
Both. In other words, let me put it this way. The Jews, for sure, but if we, coming out of Egypt, where we were at, that was, you didn't need to command it. Let me give you an example from the Meshach.
There are cannons.
Sorry.
Yeah?
Okay. I don't want to drop the Meshach, but the coming back on Avi's example, it would seem to me that we're going the other way. In other words, I think there are things that were, you know, certain types of deviancy or let's say bestiality, that, for instance, that you mentioned, which were completely unacceptable in the world at large 200 years ago and are much more tolerated today.
Okay. That's an example.
That seems to be you read that in the world.
Every time we talk about the evolution of the world, we always mention that there are also downs on the way. In other words, we know exactly where that comes from. In other words, the good of democracy, which means equality, which means to be political correct and to be anti-racist and anti-chauvinist, and all these are good things. One of the downs of that is tolerance towards
every kind of people.
Towards
if enough people want it, then it's okay.
Right. And that, so we learned the sugya of godly morality. We who know that there is a godly morality and that there has to be a godly morality. Right? We spoke about this.
Kill people, the democracy.
Right. We said this is exactly the sugya that we learned about godly morality, that you need an objective God to set down eternally and objectively what's immoral and what is moral. Right? That's something that we have. Man, because democracies, for example, haven't adopted godly morality yet, so as part of that tolerance, which is good, and democracy, which is good, we have this problem, which eventually mankind will get over it, whether it be homosexuality, bestiality, I don't know if that's accepted in the Western world, but...
It's far more than it used to be.
Since McKinsey reports, all kinds of things have been people saying.
People joke about it instead of stringing the guy off. What's the point?
No, and there have been legal cases. Not to get into it too far, but the fact is, it is more tolerated than it used to be. Yeah.
Okay, so that's a down. Okay, nevertheless, I have no doubt. We have it down on tape. That it's just a matter of time before mankind realizes that is immoral. That's going to go out.
Did you say the same thing about homosexuality?
Definitely. That's down. I thought that AIDS would do the trick. It didn't. The family unit, the strengthening of the family unit, you know, getting back to roots and the New Age and a lot of that stuff will probably also add to the return of the family unit, right?
But people are trying to abolish the family.
In the end, that's what we spoke about regarding godly morality. Yeah, there is a necessity for godly morality. That's the answer. That's higher up. Okay. The Meshech Chochmah Parshat Noach says something very interesting. He mentions the Gemara in Yom Tovot, which says that men are obligated in Pru Revu to have children, and women are not. Which at first glance doesn't seem too logical, right? He need both to procreate. So why are only men obligated?
It's more natural.
And the Meshech Chochmah gives two answers. Number one, he says that Derachei Adarchei Noam V'chol Netivotei Hashalom, HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us, and He, in His Torah, only commands us things that are not painful. And therefore, a woman, after, by the way, he makes an interesting diuk, that in Adam and Chava, it says Pru Urvu in the plural. Before women were cursed with the pain of childbirth, women originally were commanded. Only after the curse is only man commanded. Because, like we said, God doesn't want to obligate women to have to suffer. If they want to, they can. If they don't want to, they prefer not to get married. That's also their prerogative. That's the first answer. The second answer is what Yoshua said. The Meshech Chochmah says that it's natural for women to want children.
Or at least to want to get married.
You know, everyone knows the machloket between nature and nurture. But I just know that whenever my daughter goes to Gan, and all my daughters, I have four daughters and three sons, the girls like to play with dolls and the boys don't. And, you know, you could say where, you could again ask where that comes from. Adler, famous psychologist, did a test that nobody would do today. He also, obviously, the comparison isn't so strong. Nevertheless, this is what he did. He starved female monkeys, and at the end of the day, put in their cage on the one side food and water, and on the other side, their crying children who wanted to nurse. And he found that statistically, chad mashmai, was very conclusive, that the females went to nurse their children rather than to eat and drink themselves. In other words, the females in the mammal world, and the Havdil people, you know, we're not animals, but, you know, there is, you know, obviously this is an experiment that one should do with people, and questionable whether one should do it with animals either, but once he did it, you know, there is what to say, there's something in the hormones that women, and by the way, it stems from the same survival instinct, right? Just like there's a survival instinct which drives us to eat, so too the mean, the species, has a survival instinct where the females take care and they want to have children, okay? So the Meshech Chochmah says, why do women not have to be obligated to have children? Because it's natural. Now, where does that nature come from? The same God that wrote the Torah. And that's what Rav Kook says, zehu kimufurash. That's as if it's being commanded. In other words, a person, even if it doesn't say that a person, it's not one of the 613 commandments not to be a cannibal. Nevertheless, if it's in our nature, thank God, not to be cannibalistic, listen to that nature, because that nature is godly. And this is something which appears in all the writings of Rav Kook, and this is something we spoke about. If you remember, as long as your nature is unadulterated, as long as it's in its godly form, listen to your healthy nature. What you have to be careful is we can adulterate our good godly nature.
You don't think
if we brought the example of anorexia, right?
Right now the Western animals, world is below is reproducing at below replacement level.
And eventually I'm sure they'll get out of that. You know, again, I don't know if it'll take one generation or two generations. As soon as it starts becoming problematic, so they'll
baby bonus.
A baby bonus, right? But things like that. This is exactly how the world always settles out its problem. That's what evolution is about. Sometimes, and obviously, it's not good if you're in a generation with one of the downs, but that's the way of the world.